Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org, click Find a Church.
Under our plan, no federal dollars will be used to fund abortion.
Unless there's an explicit exclusion of abortion, abortion will be in health care reform.
We believe that abortion should be safe, legal, rare, and accessible, and that a health care reform should not make it more difficult for women to get abortions in this country.
We think that in some sense is a distraction. I mean, it's a very important issue. But in the context of a country where a growing number of millions and millions of people do not have health insurance, we feel that's more the main issue for this particular debate.
The American people will not stand for government-run insurance that uses taxpayer money to fund abortions in this country.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love issues, etc.
Well, if you haven't been there, you've certainly seen pictures. Maybe not the Grand Canyon, any canyon for that matter. We're told that these canyons, you find them all over the world, formed because a river very slowly but surely, over millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of years, carved them out. You go to the Grand Canyon, they will tell you with a straight face, this mile wide in some cases, mile deep, 25 miles wide at some points, carved by the Little Colorado River. It's not so little, but looks little down there at the bottom, all carved by that river, and it took a really, really, really long time, they will tell you. Is that true? Are things like the Grand Canyon proof positive that the Earth is old and evolution is the only explanation? We're going to be talking about evolution and rapid canyon formation. Dr. Terry Mortensen joins us here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, the 19th of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation on rapid canyon formation, Dr. Carl Beckwith will join us to conclude our five-part series with him on early Christianity today, Christianity and culture. We're going to look way back to the very first centuries of Christianity. How did the earliest church fathers think about the culture in which they lived? We'll answer those questions coming up here in about a half hour. In the second hour of the program, Gretchen Pasentino of Answers in Action will be our guest. We'll talk with her about the death late last week of Elizabeth Clare Prophet, the most well-known leader of the church, universal and triumphant. We'll talk about Elizabeth Clare Prophet, what her claims were, and now that she's gone, what happens to the church, universal and triumphant. Pastor Stephen Parks will then join us because this week is Reformation Week. We know Reformation's coming a little bit later in the month, but this week is Reformation Week here at Issues, etc. We're going to kick it off today with the beginning of a five-part series on the 16th century Reformation and its theology. Today, we'll begin with Scripture alone. Pastor Stephen Parks will be our guest. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE. That's our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or if you follow us at Twitter, @IssuesETC. That'll get a question or comment to us as well, @IssuesETC. Dr. Terry Mortensen is international creation speaker and scholar for Answers in Genesis. He holds a PhD in the history of geology, and he's author of The Great Turning Point, The Church's Catastrophic Mistake on Geology, and co-editor of Coming to Grips with Genesis. Dr. Mortensen, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Well, golly, we've all seen the pictures of the Grand Canyon. It's a monumental, unbelievable hole in the ground, and we're told that it was formed over millions, if not hundreds of millions of years, and it's proof positive, they say, of the evolutionary model of the world and, by extension, of ourselves. How do you respond?
Well, the Park Service says the layers were laid down over about 300 million years, and the river cut the canyon over about 1 to 5 million years, and there's huge problems with that. First of all, the canyon is 4 to 18 miles wide, so To say that the river cut it, we've got to totally redefine what we mean by the Colorado River. But when we go down into the canyon, say on the Colorado River itself, we see evidence in the geological record that those layers were not laid down over millions of years. For example, there's folding. Whole sections of the Grand Canyon are folded, and it indicates that the sediments, different kinds of sediments, were all relatively soft and moist when the earth moved and folded those. There's also the fact that between a number of the layers, the evolutionists posit that there are millions, tens of millions, in one case about 140 million years missing, but there's no evidence of any erosion between those two layers. So it, again, looks like very rapid burial. Also, the fossils in the rock layers speak of rapid burial and fossilization. So those are a number of the reasons why we reject the evolutionary interpretation of the canyon.
Now, I want to get to Mount St. Helens and the canyon that formed, much smaller canyon, but a canyon that formed very shortly and very quickly after that eruption in just a moment. But it sounds like you're trying to put a fine point on this, that both the laying down of the layers that we see cut through in places like the Grand Canyon and the formation of the canyon itself both took place relatively rapidly.
Catastrophically in days, weeks, or months.
Okay, then let's talk about Mount St. Helens, its eruption, and what happened in the days that followed that cataclysm.
Well, it erupted on May 18th, 1980, and in 6 minutes, the explosion didn't go completely straight up. Some of it went out the side, and it mowed down 150 square miles of virgin forest in 6 minutes, dragging over a million trees back into Spirit Lake, and many of those trees began to sink to the bottom over the next decade or so. About half of those million trees were deposited on the bottom of Spirit Lake, and 20 to 40,000 of those trees landed in the lake in an upright position as if they'd grown in place with their root ball at the bottom. But they hadn't grown in place. They'd been deposited there by a catastrophe.
And what about the formation of this canyon?
Well, the layers, there was the original eruption on May 18th. Then there was another eruption on the 12th of June the same year, and it laid down a finely laminated layer about 25 feet thick in 3 hours. Then on May 19th, 1982, there was a massive mud flow that carved through the sediments that had been deposited during the earlier deposition, carved a canyon that was 140 feet deep through those sediments that had been partially hardened, and created a canyon that was reminiscent of the Grand Canyon, only at about 1/40th scale model.
So how would you apply that to much bigger features that we find, like the Grand Canyon?
Well, before that eruption, geologists would have looked at sediments that were finely layered or laminated, as they say, very, very fine layers, like less than an eighth of an inch, 16th of an inch. They would have said, well, those were the deposits, annual or maybe seasonal deposits in a lake. But the mud flow on June 12th of 1980 laid down those fine laminations by a mud flow moving at hurricane speed in 3 hours. So it showed us that catastrophic processes can produce the kinds of features that traditionally had been thought to require thousands or millions of years. And the same with the erosion of the canyon. Comparing the canyon, which has a lot of features just like the Grand Canyon, it shows that catastrophic processes can produce those valley systems. Doesn't take millions of years.
So what are you suggesting, with about a minute and a half before we take our first break, what are you suggesting really is the origin of the Grand Canyon?
Well, I've been on raft trips down the Colorado River five times with PhD geologists, and creation geologists believe that the layers that we see in a horizontal position as you're standing looking at the rim, that they were deposited in the early stage of Noah's flood, but that the canyon was formed either in the recessional stage towards the end of the flood or possibly in a post-flood erosional event as waters got trapped behind the northeast end of the Grand Canyon because those layers are uplifted there, and waters got trapped from the Green River and Colorado River drainage systems, and eventually in the post-flood period those waters filled up lakes and overtopped the uplifted portion, and then you had rapid erosion through those sediments. So creation scientists still need to do more research, but those are the two options for explaining the hole in the ground.
So not unlike if there's a flash flood and it cuts through your yard, I mean a very small scale, obviously, cuts a little canyon through your yard, it happens very quickly, and what's left behind may only have a little rivulet of water running down the bottom. Am I getting the picture here with only about 10
seconds?
Right.
In other words, the present Colorado River was formed after the canyon. The canyon was not formed by the river. The canyon was there before the river went in that direction.
Dr. Terry Mortensen is our guest. We're talking about evolution and rapid canyon formation. Our call-in number on this Monday afternoon, 1-877-623-MY-IE. It's Monday, October the 19th. 1-877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address. You could Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. Terry Mortensen is international creation speaker and scholar for Answers in Genesis. He has a PhD in the history of geology. He's author of The Great Turning Point, The Church's Catastrophic Mistake on Geology, and co-editor of Coming to Grips with Genesis. You'll find a link to his organization, Answers in Genesis, under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. We'll be right back with more and Dr. Terry Mortensen. We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the Promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/IssuesETC.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about evolution and rapid canyon formation in about 10 minutes. Dr. Carl Beckwith will join us. We'll conclude our five-part series with him on early Christianity. We've covered a lot of the history, a lot of the theology, a lot of the thinking of the early Christians, how did they view themselves in relationship to the culture around them? They didn't give a uniform answer. Eventually, I think the church has come to a uniform answer, but they were still thinking about some of these things in the early church. We'll find out more with Dr. Carl Beckwith a little bit later. Dr. Terry Mortensen is our guest. So let's talk about the objection that often comes up, which is, look, the material through which the Colorado River flows and into which it cut its path, says the evolutionist, is rock. It's hard rock, or softer rock in some cases, but it's rock. And the stuff you're talking about after the Mount St. Helens event was soft stuff. I mean, it may have been solid, but it certainly wasn't rock. Your response?
Well, a lot of it was hard rock. And furthermore, I would turn it around and say a river flowing over hard rock is not going to cut it. It is catastrophic floodwaters that have the power to cut through solid rock. When they opened the Glen Canyon Dam a few years ago, the spillway, they had to shut it right away because after a couple of minutes of running, the water had started to cavitate, produce bubbles that were like jackhammers, and the water came out red, and they realized that they had a problem. So they closed the spillways, and they found a massive hole through solid concrete, reinforced concrete, and solid rock. So it's catastrophic floodwaters that have the incredible erosive power.
You mentioned this in passing just in the last segment, and that is, you know, the canyon isn't a sheer drop straight down. It's very wide at the top and relatively narrow at the bottom. And I've always wondered about that. I always wondered, well, what do they say? Do they say that the walls have been receding from one another while the river, do they say the river was actually at some point tens of miles wide flowing with this kind of force?
Well, in the guidebook that you get when you go to the Grand Canyon, they don't really say. They just have a series of colorful pictures that just shows how this all happens in 10 easy steps, but the details are not there. So there's a lot of hand-waving that goes on in evolutionary explanations.
So they do not offer an explanation, as far as we can tell, for the incredible distance between the rims at the top and the relatively narrow at the bottom.
No, they would say at the very beginning the river was meandering back and forth, and then it just gradually cut deeper and deeper and meandered less, but it just doesn't fit with what we see in the physical shape of the canyon. Something on a water on a scale that boggles the mind was moving here.
Now, we're talking about, in essence, an argument for, not just against the evolutionary model of this canyon formation, but an argument for really a universal deluge, a universal flood, aren't we?
Well, the kind of water that we're talking about, the rim of the Grand Canyon, the north rim, is 8,000 feet above sea level. You have marine fossils up there. So, yeah, we're talking about, and the canyon is huge, and the sedimentary layers, some of those layers cover tens of thousands of square miles. So we're talking about a worldwide flood here to explain the canyon. You couldn't have the waters producing those kinds of features on just a local scale.
Does it explain a lot of other features? We've talked with other guests here with regard to the geological column, the layers that are laid down, and some have pointed out, look, this is really a rather flat affair across the surface of the Earth. It really does look like a massive amount of sediment laid down by water in a very short amount of time.
Well, there are sedimentary rock layers on every continent. They show evidence of being water deposited. There are marine fossils on the tops of our highest mountains. The evolutionists have to believe those mountains went up and down many times to account for all of these sediments. But Noah's flood really makes a much more reasonable explanation for this worldwide phenomena of sedimentary rock layers and fossils.
If you assert this about the biggest of canyons on the planet's surface, Would you similarly assert this about pretty much each and every canyon that we find of that kind of scale or smaller scale on the planet?
No, not necessarily. Each particular geological formation has to be studied in its local context, and there would be residual post-flood catastrophism. After the floodwaters have receded, there would have continued to be a lot of rain. The ice age is considered a post-flood period in the creationist model. We believe there was only one. There's only clear evidence for one ice age, and we believe that the flood produced the conditions for an ice age. So as those glaciers were melting back, you would have a small localized scale catastrophes, such as, for example, we believe the Scablands up in eastern Washington were formed by a post-flood erosion event as waters that were trapped after the flood eroded through solid rock in a short period of time. And the evolutionists would agree that the Scablands were largely carved in 1 to 2 days rather than what they usually said for over half a century, that it was millions of years.
Do you think that the evolutionist could concede that it was a cataclysmic event that formed the Grand Canyon and still keep his theory?
Yeah, he might. He might. In fact, there I haven't met them, but I've been told by others who've gone on hikes down the Grand Canyon that some of the guides are suggesting that it was catastrophes and not the regular Colorado River that cut most of the Grand Canyon. So they're already, some of them at least, are opening up to that possibility. But they might say, well, that was part of early history, and then the sedimentary layers that are on top of the Colorado Plateau as we go up into Colorado and east and north, that those were laid down in later catastrophes separated by millions of years from the one that carved the Grand Canyon. So, yeah, I would expect that they would probably argue that way.
Is that how they argue for sedimentary layers planet-wide? I mean, it's, in essence, you got to have, if you are given enough time, the oceans are going to, you're going to find oceans all over the surface of the Earth?
Well, you'll have, they would say there could be some very large catastrophes, but that they didn't all happen at the same time in one global flood. And so for many, many years, over 140 years, the view was that everything was formed by slow, gradual erosion and sedimentation. Catastrophism has come into geology in the last 30 or 40 years. So they are now talking about catastrophic explanations, but only for localized areas. They would still say that it was over millions of years.
So if you were to take a group of people up to Mount St. Helens and see the canyon that was formed there very quickly after the eruption and in its aftermath, and someone said, well, this just reminds me of the Grand Canyon, just on a smaller scale, how would you explain not only the origin of that small canyon, but perhaps the origin of the greater one?
How would I?
Yes.
Well, we know how the one at Mount St. Helens formed. It formed in one day through a mud flow moving at 100 miles an hour. And so it becomes an analogy when we compare the results of what it did, the kind of canyon, the shapes of the canyon walls and other features, and then we compare that to the Grand Canyon, it becomes an analogy, and we say, could this indicate to us how the Grand Canyon formed? Maybe the water wasn't as muddy. Maybe it was. You know, we can't say for sure. But it shows the power of catastrophic floodwaters. And that then becomes a better analogy than the idea of slow, gradual erosion by a Colorado River, which in the way that the landscape of the Colorado Plateau is, the river would have had to run uphill to start, and rivers don't run uphill.
With only 30 seconds, do you realistically expect them to change the brochure, the one that they hand you when you go to the visitor center?
No, I don't, because the millions of years is deeply entrenched in science, and ultimately, I believe, It is it got into science for spiritual reasons. Geologists in the 19th century, which I explain in my book, The Great Turning Point, they were deists or atheists, and they were making anti-biblical assumptions that they used to interpret the rock record in a way that totally denied and annihilated faith in the flood.
Dr. Terry Mortensen is an international speaker and scholar for Answers in Genesis. He has a PhD in the history of geology. He's author of The Great Turning Point, The Church's Catastrophic Mistake on Geology, and co-editor of Coming to Grips with Genesis. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, good to be with you, Todd.
When we come back from this break, Dr. Carl Beckwith joins us. He's been joining us every week for a month now, and here in the fifth installment with him, we're concluding our series on early Christianity. How did the Christians understand themselves in the context of their culture? Now you say, wow, the ancient Christians lived in a culture so different from ours. In many ways, yes. Technologically different. I think in all the other ways, probably more alike are our culture and that of first and second century Christians. We'll see how they viewed their culture with Dr. Carl Beckwith of Beeson Divinity School right after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget on our website, issuesetc.org. Click Promote. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click Promote. Find out about the Issues Etc. 300.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Scientists are struggling to figure out why a small village in India has four times the number of twins born there than what's normal for the rest of the world. The Twin Village, as it's being called, isn't exposed to any harmful drugs or chemicals. As a matter of fact, all factors leading to the cause of twinning worldwide aren't seen there. Some scientists actually believe it could be something in the water. As they work to figure out what's causing this added blessing, parents are busy trying to tell their children apart. I don't think there's any reason for women in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to panic yet. But I'll follow up with any answers they come up with to solve this mystery. Regardless, the villagers are tickled with their twins.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.